out, and what were the circumstances like?
Well, I found out actually the same day the press release came out, and it's a good thing that I'm cautious twice. The first I had heard about it was I got an email in May or June of last year that I deleted.
Huh.
And then pulled back up, but it said, you are under consideration for a presidential award. We can't tell you what it is. We can't tell you whether you're going to get it. You are not allowed to tell anyone that you got this email, but we need you to send us your full name, address, social security number, and date of birth by tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, my. Wow. Then you did that, I guess.
Well, like I said, I deleted the email first, and then we went back and looked, and there was actually this office, and it was a real email address, and this person did exist. And so I took a flyer and sent all of my sensitive information off to an email and really didn't hear anything else about it until Monday. Monday morning, I got an email saying, congratulations, you've won this great award. You can't tell anybody.
Until the press release came out shortly after that.
Exactly.
Well, congratulations again to that. I think it's terrific. Now, do you understand that somebody nominated for you for this, or is there someone in some government office that's looking at all the research being done and said, you know what, here's 102 people that are worthy of this recognition because they're doing something very important?
So this award, you are nominated. To be eligible, you have to be doing federally funded research, and all of the awardees come from the different departments under the White House, so the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of the Interior, and so on. And you have to be nominated by the program officer who is in charge of managing your federal funding.
How about that?
So I was nominated by my program officer, well, NIH.
That's terrific. And you are under the Department of Health and Human Services there with your part of the group that's under that heading. What does this do now for you? What goes along? And is this called, I know the acronym is PECASE. I would call that PCASE.
Yes, it's called a PCASE.
A PCASE. You're now a PCASE. That's nice.
Apparently I am.
What does this mean for your research?
Well, honestly, I don't know. I don't think it actually comes with money for my research, but it might. That's something that each of the individual agencies will decide, and so that'll again be up to my program officer running interference with NIH for me. I do get to, at some point when they get it scheduled, go to Washington, D.C. and accept it from the president in person at the White House, which is why they needed all that information, because you can't shake hands with the president without a security clearance.
You'll be doing a lot of background check on you, indeed.
Presumably they already did that, and I came back clean.
That's good. That's good. Let's talk about what research you're doing and what caught their attention. I've gone to your lab website. I think it's fun. It's called the cornelisonlab.missouri.edu. You work with undergrad and graduate students, and they look like they're pretty happy to be in your lab.
We do have a good time in the lab. We get a lot of good science done, but we've also, we've got a basketball hoop over the door, and there have been known to be a few pranks played back and forth in the lab, and we generally have a good time, yeah.
So what is a lab like? Help me understand the running of a lab. When it's like your lab with your name attached to it, what does that mean? Is this like a workplace where 10 or 11 people show up most days? They have set work hours. They have assignments. What's the lab like in a research institution?
Think of it as a small business. So if I am running a small business, I have employees who work for me on full-time or part-time schedule. So my graduate students and my postdoctoral researcher work actually probably more than full-time because science tends to take up quite a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have undergraduates who come in and work basically part-time during the school year, and many of them work full-time during the summer. And I have overhead costs. I have personnel costs. I have to pay for all of the students and the postdocs. I have overhead. I have to pay for my mice and the upkeep on my equipment and the equipment in the first place. One of my students pointed out that I have basically advertising costs in that I have to go out and talk about our work. And when I do publish our work in scientific journals, most people don't realize that it costs between $2,000 and $5,000 every time I publish. So they don't just, it's not like sending an article into the newspaper and then they publish it. You must pay the journal to publish it.
I did not realize that. What is the thinking of that? Do they have to vet it before they publish it, and it has costs associated with that? I didn't realize you'd have to pay to get a journal article published.
Peer review happens, but that's not what costs money. It's actually putting together and editing and printing and distributing the physical journal itself that costs money. And then there are professional editors, there's staff at the journal, and they also have to pay their bills. And the way they do that is by charging article charges.
Interesting. You do have, as a release yesterday that came from the University of Missouri, you have two current National Institutes of Health grants. That's what you are able to use to pay your employees, pay yourself, pay the journals to get your research articles published, correct?
Exactly.
Let me ask you this. If you were describing to someone, and when you go out and you talk about what you're doing, how do you describe what it is that's important about your lab's work? What is it that you're focused on?
What I've always been focused on since I was a graduate student was how skeletal muscle repairs itself. So skeletal muscle is actually as good at repairing itself, if not better, than the liver, which everyone knows is great at repairing itself. Skeletal muscle has a population of stem cells that we call satellite cells. And basically, these cells' job is to replace any muscle that you lose to damage or, in some cases, disease. So most of my career has been spent looking at how these stem cells see the damage signals and what they do in response that lets them grow the muscle back.
How long have you been?
More recently, what we've been looking at is how not only these cells, but the muscle itself and the nerves and lately the blood vessels that are all running together in the same tissue interact and help to pattern each other so that you get back the same thing that you lost.
That sounds fascinating, but it also sounds like something that requires great patience. Would that be true?
All of science requires great patience and a very significant capacity for delayed gratification.
I like that. Now, how long have you been working on this?
I started working on this in graduate school. So I picked up this project in probably 1994 or 1995.
You know, it's interesting because if you do that, and then I look back at the name of the PCase Presidential Early Career Awards. This is early in your career is what they're recognizing you for, but it goes back at least a couple of decades.
Yes. The more surprising thing, I think, is that it is now reasonable to assume that someone my age in my late 40s is still in my early career.
Uh-huh.
And part of this is just because as funding has become more and more difficult to get, the age at which you start getting significant funding has gone from, I believe, your first R01, which is our big million-dollar research grant. People used to start getting that when they were between 32 and 34. And I believe the age at which people now get that is now approaching 46.
What an insight that is into the process of what we do and what has happened with the funding of important research. The research that you're doing with those satellite cells or those stem cells and, as you said, skeletal muscle regeneration, is that true?
That's it, yes.
Now, so is that could be applied down the road to what conditions that humans deal with?
The primary application that people in my field deal with is Duchenne's muscular dystrophy.
Mm.
So Jerry's kids,
mm-hmm.
Duchenne's actually is the most common lethal inherited birth defect. About one in every 2,500 boys born has Duchenne's. And while we've made really, really great advances in care and delaying the symptoms, it's still more or less a death sentence by the time these kids are in their late teens or early 20s.
Hmm.
And they start seeing quality of life issues like decreased mobility and difficulty breathing when they're still very young children, 5, 6, 8.
Wow.
And so the main push in the disease arena in my field is trying to understand why these muscles that are damaged due to a genetic weakness in the muscle itself don't regenerate efficiently after a while. So if you think about it, the satellite cells in these kids we think are actually quite efficient, but if you patch your bicycle tire once, you're fine.
Mm.
If you patch your bicycle tire 10 times, you're probably still fine. If you patch the bicycle tire and the 1,000th time it fails, it's not really the patch's fault at that point in time. And so we're trying to figure out how to put in potentially new satellite cells, either from other sources or taking out the patient's own cells, fixing the defective gene, and then putting them back in so that the muscle won't be, that they form will not be as susceptible to damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other arena that we tend to look at is aging. Because as most people know, your muscles tend to get smaller and weaker as you age, no matter what you try to do to keep them young and strong. And we aren't sure yet if there is actually a satellite cell component to that or not. Again, it looks like it might be a property of the muscle itself that leads to the satellite cells not functioning as efficiently as they could.
Wow.
And so if there's something systemic that we can change, you know, a drug, an injection, something that would make the cells respond more the way young cells in a young environment would, we could decrease the cost in quality of life and in healthcare costs that comes from falls and weakness associated with aging.
Well, that's a great, good explanation. I think I can understand all of that, and it's well put, and it's how important that sounds. And it's you're doing this at the Bond Life Sciences Center on the campus, right?
Yes, I've been in the Bond Life Sciences Center since I started my assistant professor position here about 12 years ago.
Well, congratulations again. And for listeners, I would say again that Dr. Connellison has achieved the Presidential Early Career Award, one of 102, just announced 2 days ago. And it's for her work being done at the University of Missouri. You could look at more at her website, the Connellison Lab. .missouri.edu and see the group that's working on this and find out more about that research. I'll just say to you again, congratulations. That is something that is really terrific, and I'm glad you won the award and glad for the work you're doing, and we look forward to how that will pay off in practical ways in the future for those who suffer with what you've just described and for all of us who want to age but age with more strength, I would hope. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Dr. D. Connellison has been our guest, Associate Professor of Biological Sciences and Investigator at the Bond Life Sciences Center, talking about the Presidential Early Career Awards for Scientist and Engineer, the PCASE that she won earlier, or that she was recognized with earlier this week. This is KFR.